Shooting is the wrong thing to do. He's an exhibitionist, not a murderer. He's probably not even armed. Grandma helped herself to a cookie set out on a tray by the door.
You wouldn't be saying that if you saw him naked.
I eased my way along the wall, inching past knots of people who were more interested in socializing than in grieving. Not that this was a bad thing. Death in the Berg was like pot roast at 6 o'clock, an unavoidable and perfectly normal part of the fabric of life. You got born, you ate pot roast, and you died. I came up behind Turley and snapped a cuff on his right wrist.
Bond enforcement, I whispered in his ear. Come with me, and we don't have to make a big scene. We'll just quietly walk to the door.
Turley looked at me and looked at the cuff on his wrist.
What?
You missed your court date. You need to reschedule.
I'm not going to court. I didn't do anything wrong.
You flash Mrs. Zajac.
It's my thing. Everybody knows I'm the flasher. I've been flashing for years.
No kidding. This is the third time I've captured you for failing to appear. You should get a new hobby.
It's not a hobby, Turley said. It's a calling.
Okay, it's a calling. You still have to reschedule your court date.
You always say that, and then when I get to the courthouse with you, I get locked up in jail. You're a big fibber. Does your mother know you tell fibs?
Does your mother know you flash old ladies?
Turley's attention switched to the door where Lula and Grandma were standing.
What are the police doing here?
He asked. I turned to look, and he jumped away.
Ha! Fooled ya! He said,
and he scuttled around to the other side of the casket. I lunged and missed, bumping into Mary Jane Dugan. Sorry about your loss, I said, shoving her aside.
What's going on? She wanted to know. Stephanie Plum, is that you?
Turley took off for the double doors at the front of the room, and I ran after him. He knocked some lady on her ass, and I tripped over her.
Sorry,
I said, scrambling to my feet in time to see Grandma do a flying tackle at Turley. Turley wriggled away from Grandma and escaped into the ladies' room.
Two women ran out shrieking, and Grandma Lula and I barged in.
Turley was trapped against the wall between the tampon dispenser and the sanitary hand dryer.
You'll never take me alive, he said.
Do you have a gun? I asked him.
No.
Are you booby-trapped?
No.
Then how are you gonna die?
I don't know, Turley said. I just always wanted to say that. Could we hurry this up? Lula said. I'm missing my Wednesday night television shows. I'll make a deal, Turley said. I'll go with you if I can flash everyone on my way out of the ladies' room.
No way, I told him.
Ew, Lula said. Ick.
Grandma slid her dentures around a little, thinking.
I wouldn't mind seeing that, she said.
Turley unzipped his pants and reached inside.
Hold it right there, Lula said. I got a stun gun here, and you pull anything out of your pants and I'll zap you.
Next thing, there was a zzzt from the stun gun, and Junior Turley was on the floor with his tool hanging out.
Whoa, Nelly,
Lula said, staring down at Junior.
Yep, Grandma said. He's got a big one. All them Turleys is hung like horses. Not that I know firsthand, except for Junior, and maybe Junior's Uncle Runt. I saw him take a leak outside the Polish National Hall one time, and it was like he had hold of a fire hose. I tell you, for a little guy, he had a real good-sized wanger.
We need to get that thing back in his pants before we drag him out of here, I said.
I'll do it, Grandma said.
I think you've done enough, Lula said. You're the one encouraged him to take it out in the first place.
They looked over at me. No, 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 I said. Not me. No way, Jose. I'm not touching it.
Maybe we could drag him out face down, Lula said. Then no one would see. All we have to do is flip him over.
That seemed like an okay plan, so we rolled him over and I finished cuffing him. Then Lula took a foot and I took a foot. Grandma got the door and we hauled him out of the ladies' room. All conversation stopped when we dragged Junior through the lobby. It was like everyone inhaled at precisely the same time and the air all got sucked out of the room. Halfway across the oriental carpet, Junior's eyes popped open, his body went rigid, and he let out a shriek.
Yow!
Junior yelled, flopping around like a fish out of water, wrangling himself over onto his back. He had a huge erection and a bad case of rug burn.
I gotta tell you, I'm impressed, Lula said, checking out Junior's stiffy. And I don't impress easy.
It's a pip, Grandma said.
It was a pip and a half. I was going to have nightmares. By now, the funeral director was hovering over Junior, hands clasped to his chest, face red enough to be in stroke range.
do something, he pleaded. Call the police, call the paramedics, get him out of here. No problemo, I said. Sorry about the disturbance. Lula and I pulled Junior to his feet and muscled him to the door. We got him outside onto the porch, and he kicked Lula.
Hey, Lula said, bending over. That hurts.
He gave Lula a shove. She grabbed me by my sweatshirt, and Lula and I went head over tea kettles down the wide front stairs.
Adios,
Junior yelled, and he ran away into the night. I was flat on my back on the sidewalk. My jeans had a tear in the knee, my arm was scraped and bleeding, and I was worried my ass was broken. I went to hands and knees and slowly dragged myself up to a semi-vertical position. Lula crawled to her feet after me.
I'm surprised he could run with that monster boner, she said. I swear if it was 2 inches longer, it'd be dragging on the ground.
I dropped Grandma off at my parents' house, drove to my building, parked, and limped to my apartment. I flipped the light on, locked the door behind me, and said hello to Rex. Rex was working up a sweat running on his wheel, beady black eyes blazing bright. I dropped a couple raisins into his cage, and my phone rang. Myra Baranowski's daughter has a good job in the bank, my mother said, and Margaret Beadle's daughter is an accountant. She works in an office like a normal human being. Why do I have a daughter who drags aroused men through funeral parlors? I had 14 phone calls before your grandmother even got home. The Berg has a news pipeline that makes CNN look like chump change. I think it must have happened when he got rug burn, I told my mother. He didn't have an erection when I cuffed him in the ladies' room. I'm going to have to move to Arizona. I read about this place, Lake Havasu. No one would know me there. I disconnected, and Morelli called me.
Are you okay? He asked. I heard you dragged a naked guy through the funeral parlor, and then shots were fired, and you fell down the stairs.
Who told you that?
My mother. Loretta Minetti called her.
He wasn't naked, and no shots were fired. He kicked Lula, and Lula took me down the stairs with her.
Just checking,
Morelli said, and he hung up. I dropped my clothes on the bathroom floor and washed the blood away in the shower. I pulled on my old flannel pajamas and went to bed. Tomorrow would be a better day, I thought. I'd get a good night's sleep in my nice soft jammies and wake up to sunshine. My phone rang at 5:20 a.m. I reached for it in the dark and brought it to my ear. Who died? I asked.
No one died, Ranger said. I'm coming into your apartment and I didn't want you to freak.
I heard my front door open and close, and moments later, Ranger was in my bedroom. He flipped the light on and looked down at me.
I'd like to crawl in next to you, but there was another break-in tonight. This time it was a commercial account. I want you to take a look at it with me.
Now? Can't it wait? Ranger grabbed jeans from my closet and tossed them at me. The jeans were followed by a sweatshirt and socks.
I want to go through the building before people arrive for work.
It's the middle of the night.
Not nearly, Ranger said.
He looked at his watch.
You have 30 seconds to get dressed, and then you're going in your pajamas.
Honestly, I said, rolling out of bed, scooping my clothes up into my arms. You are such a jerk.
20 seconds.
I stomped off into the bathroom and slammed the door closed. I got dressed and was about to brush my hair when the door opened and Ranger pulled me out of the bathroom.
Time's up, Ranger said.
I didn't even have time to fix my hair. Ranger was dressed in a black rangeman t-shirt, cargo pants, windbreaker, and ball cap. He took the ball cap off his head and put it on mine.
Problem solved, he said, taking my hand, towing me out of my apartment.
The building that had gotten hit was just 4 blocks from my apartment. Police cars and rangeman cars were angled into the curb, lights flashing, and lights were on inside the building. Ranger ushered me into the lobby, and one of his men brought me a cup of coffee.
This building is owned by a local insurance company, Ranger said. As you can see, the first floor is mostly lobby with a front desk and satellite glass-fronted offices. Executive offices, a boardroom, a small employee kitchenette, and a storeroom are on the second floor. It's not a high-security account. They have an alarm system. No cameras. For the most part, there's nothing of value in this building. The computers are antiquated. There are no cash transactions. The only thing of value was a small collection of Fabergé eggs in the company president's office, and that's what was taken.
Was the routine the same?
The thief entered through a back door that had a numerical code lock. He deactivated the alarm, went directly to the second floor office, took the eggs, reset the alarm, and left. The alarm was off for 15 minutes.
He had to be moving to get all that done in 15 minutes.
I had one of my men run through it. It's possible.
Was the president's office locked?
The office door was locked, but it wasn't a complicated lock, and the thief was able to open it. He didn't bother to close the door or relock it when he left.
How much were the eggs worth?
There were 3 eggs. One was especially valuable. Collectively, he probably lost $250,000.
Is this guy going to have a hard time fencing the eggs?
I imagine they'll go out of country.
I looked around. There was one uniform left in the building and one plainclothes guy from Trenton PD. I didn't know either of them. Ranger had 4 men on site. 2 were at the front door and 2 were at the elevator. How was this discovered? I asked Ranger. Is there a night watchman or something?
The company president likes to get an early start. He's here at 5 every morning.
Morelli was awake at 5. Ranger was awake at 5. And now here was another moron at work at 5. As far as I was concerned, 5 was the middle of the night. What am I supposed to do? I asked Ranger.
Look around.
I went to the back door and looked outside. From what I could see, there was an alley, a small blacktop parking lot with 6 designated spaces. No light. There should be a light. I stepped outside and looked up at the building. The light had been smashed. There were some glass shards on the ground under the light. I went back inside and looked for the alarm pad, on the wall to my right, exactly where I would have put it. I walked to the stairs, imagining the thief doing this in the dark. Probably had a pen light and knew exactly where he was going, and he was in a hurry, so he would take the stairs rather than the elevator. I prowled through the second floor, peeking into offices, the kitchen, the storeroom. It all looked pretty normal. The president's office was nice, but not extravagant. Corner office with windows. Executive desk and fancy leather chair. Couple smaller chairs in front of the desk. Built-in bookcase behind the desk with an empty shelf. I guess that was where the eggs used to be. I sat in the fancy leather chair and swiveled a little, checking out the pictures on the desk. Balding, overweight guy with a cheesy mustache, posing with a preppy, dark-haired woman and 2 little boys. The corporate family photo display, placed next to the corporate pen and pencil set that some decorator probably requisitioned and the guy never used, matching leather blotter. And alongside the desk was the matching corporate wastebasket. A single Snickers wrapper was in the wastebasket. I called Ranger on my cell phone. Where are you? I asked.
Downstairs with Jean Baran, the president of the company.
How did the thief know about the eggs?
The Trenton paper ran a feature on them 2 weeks ago.
Perfect.
Anything else? Ranger asked.
It looks like the cleaning crew came through here last night.
They left at 11:30.
There's a Snickers wrapper in the wastebasket. There was some discussion at the other end, and Ranger came back on.
Jean said he saw it on the floor, so he put it in the wastebasket.
It could be a clue, I said to Ranger.
Ranger disconnected.
I ambled downstairs and slouched into a man-sized chair in the lobby. The police had cleared out, and there were only 2 Rangeman employees left. Ranger spoke to the company president for another 5 minutes. They shook hands, and Ranger crossed the room to where I was sitting.
I'm leaving Sal and Raphael here until the building opens for business, Ranger said. We can go back to Rangeman.
It isn't even 7 a.m. Normal people are still asleep.
Is this going somewhere? Ranger asked.
Yes, it's going to take Stephanie home so she can go back to bed.
Babe, I'd be happy to take you back to bed.
Ugh, mental head slap. It was almost noon when I left my apartment for the second time that morning. I'd run out of Rangeman clothes, so I was dressed in jeans and a stretchy red V-neck t-shirt. My hair was freshly washed and fluffed. My eyes were enhanced with liner and mascara. My lips were comfy in Burt's Bees lip balm. I stopped at the bonds office on my way to Rangeman.
Just in time for lunch, Lula said when I walked in the door. Me and Connie are feeling like we should try the chicken at the new barbecue place by the hospital.
That's sacrilege. You always get your chicken a cluck in a bucket.
Yeah, but we gotta do barbecue research. I don't have my just right gourmet barbecue sauce yet. I might have had it on the chicken last night, but the dogs run off with it. Anyways, I thought it wouldn't hurt to shop around. And I hear the guy who owns the barbecue place is going to be in the contest.
Sorry, no can do. I'm late for work.
Just tell Ranger you needed barbecue, Lula said. Everybody understands when the barbecue urge comes over you. And besides, there's no place to park by that barbecue place. I need a ride up there. It'll take you a minute, and it's the least you can do since I rescued you from that embarrassing experience last night.
You didn't rescue me. You pulled me down the stairs and let Junior escape.
Yeah, but people was watching me go ass over elbows down the stairs, and they hardly noticed you at all.
That could be true. Okay, I'll give you a ride, but then I have to go to work. Lula hiked her purse onto her shoulder.
We got it all planned out what me and Connie want to eat. All's I gotta do is run in and out.
Lula and I stepped out of the office onto the sidewalk and stood for a moment squinting into the sun.
This here's a beautiful day, Lula said. I got a real good feeling about today.
A black Mercedes with tinted windows pulled out of a parking space half a block away and cruised up to the bonds office. It slowed, the side window slid down, a gun barrel appeared, there was maniacal giggling, and four rounds were fired off. I heard a bullet whistle past my ear, the plate glass window behind me cracked, and Lula and I hit the ground. Connie kicked the bonds office door open and aimed a Glock at the Mercedes, but the car was already too far away.
That asshole took out my computer, Connie said.
Lula hauled herself up off the sidewalk and pulled her lime green spandex miniskirt down over her butt.
Someone call the police. Call the National Guard. Those guys are out to get me. That was one of those Chipotle killers behind that gun. I saw his idiot face, and I heard that crazy ass giggling. Did someone get that license plate?
Vinny appeared in the doorway and cautiously peeked outside.
What's going on?
Vinny was my rodent cousin. Good bail bondsman. Scary human being. Slicked back hair, face like a ferret, dressed like Tony Soprano, had a body like Pee-wee Herman.
Someone's trying to kill Lula, Connie said.
Vinny put his hand to his heart.
That's a relief. I thought they were after me. It's no relief to me, Lula said. I'm a nervous wreck, and stress like this is bad for your immune system. I read about it. I could get shingles or something.
People from nearby businesses migrated onto the sidewalk, looked around, and realized it was just the bonds office getting shot at. Their faces registered that this was no big whoopity-doo, and they drifted back into their buildings. Lights flashed in the distance on Hamilton, and a fire truck and an EMS truck rumbled to a stop in front of the office.
Hey, I yelled to the fire truck. You're blocking me in. I have to go to work. We don't need you. Of course we need them, Lula said. Do you see that big, beautiful man driving that fire truck? I think I saw him on one of them fire truck hunks calendars.
Lula stood on tiptoes in her spike heels and waved to him.
You, sweetie, here I am. I've been shot at, she called. I might be faint. I might need some of that mouth-to-mouth.
10 minutes later, I was still waiting for the fire truck to take off, and Morelli strolled over.
Now what? He said.
A guy in a black Mercedes shot at Lula. She said it was one of the Chipotle killers. Morelli cut his eyes to Lula.
Guess they didn't tag her.
No, but they got Connie's computer.
Anyone see the license plate?
Nope.
I like this red shirt you're wearing,
Morelli said, tracing along the neckline with his fingertip.
Did you get fired from your new job already?
No, I ran out of black clothes.
What happens if you don't dress in black? Do you have to go to detention? Do you get fined?
I did an eye roll.
I'm serious,
Morelli said, laugh lines crinkling the corners of his eyes.
Are all the towels in the building black? Is there black toilet paper?
I did a 5 count of deep breathing as an alternative to kicking him in the knee. If you could get that fire truck to move, I could go to work, I finally said. Morelli was still smiling.
You would owe me.
What did you have in mind?
A night of wild gorilla sex.
Good grief.
How bad do you want to go to work? He asked.
Wild gorilla sex isn't going to happen. I'm not interested. I'm done with men.
Too bad, he said. I learned some new moves.
We are no longer a couple, I told him. And you better not have learned those moves from Joyce Barnhart. Morelli and I went to school with Joyce Barnhart. And she'd always had a thing for Morelli. For as long as I can remember, Joyce Barnhart has been like a needle in my eye. I severely disliked Joyce Barnhart. It was close to 2 o'clock when I walked through the 5th floor control room and settled myself in my cubicle. My intercom buzzed, and Ranger came on.
My office, he said.
I walked the short distance to his office and looked in at him. What?
Come in and close the door.
I closed the door and sat in a chair opposite him. He was at his desk, and I was struck by the same thought I had every time I came into his office. Ranger always looked at ease, but he never actually looked like he belonged behind a desk. He looked like he should be scaling a wall or jumping out of a helicopter or kicking the crap out of some bad guy. Do you like doing this? I asked him. Do you like running this security firm?
I don't love it, he said, but I don't hate it either. It's a phase in my life. It's not so different from being a company commander in the military. Better work conditions, less sand.
I wondered if my job was also just a phase in my life. Truth is, I felt a little stalled.
Do you have any new thoughts on my problem? He asked.
Nothing big. Saibo Diaz gets the prize for most suspicious guy so far, but he doesn't fit into the puzzle right. He's like trying to ram a square peg into a round hole. Diaz was on duty when two of the break-ins occurred, so he'd have to be working with someone else. Problem is, I don't see Diaz having a partner in this kind of operation. He's totally closed. He'd have to do it all himself. The computer with the security codes is actually available to a lot of people. Four men have primary responsibility, but a bunch of other guys fill in for them when they take a break. And all the other men who are watching other monitors have the ability to see the screen on the code computer. You already knew this. The thing is, the longer I'm here, the less likely I'm inclined to believe this is an inside job. Everyone is watching everyone now, and the code computer is under constant scrutiny, and yet there was a new break-in. I think you have to look at outside possibilities, maybe a rival security firm, or a techno freak you fired or didn't hire, or maybe someone not associated with you at all who's doing it for the rush.
This isn't a large firm, Ranger said. We offer quality personal service to a select group of clients. If I remove all clients with video surveillance, I cut the list in half. If I only look at residential accounts, the list gets much smaller. I was able to increase the number of cars I have patrolling video-free residential accounts during hours when the break-ins occurred. If I have to enlarge that list to include commercial accounts spread over a two-shift period, I'm short manpower.
Maybe you can get more accounts to use video.
That's like announcing my system is corrupted. I'm trying to keep this quiet.
He handed me a list of names.
These are non-video clients, both residential and commercial. The clients that have been hit by this guy are printed in red. I'd like you to ride around and see if anything jumps out at you.
Chapter 8. I took the list back to my apartment, made myself a peanut butter sandwich, and marked Ranger's at-risk accounts on a map of Trenton. Commercial accounts in green magic marker, residential accounts in pink magic marker, accounts already hit in red. Grandma called on my cell phone.
Guess who's standing in the backyard waving his winky at me?
I'll be right there. I called Ranger and told him I needed help with an FTA who was currently in my mom's backyard. I shoved the map and the client list into my purse and ran out of my apartment, down the stairs, and across the lot to my car. If I had luck with traffic, I could make my parents' house in 5 minutes. It would take Ranger 10 to 20 minutes. I called my grandmother when I was 2 minutes away.
Is he still there? He's making his way through backyards. I can see him from the upstairs window. I think he's going to Betty Garvey's house. She gives him cookies.
I went straight to Betty Garvey. I parked at the curb in front of her house and walked around back. I didn't see Junior Turley, but Betty was at her kitchen door.
Have you seen Junior? I asked her. Yes, he just left. I gave him an oatmeal raisin cookie, and he thanked me and went on with his walk. He's such a nice, polite man.
Which way did he go?
He was walking toward Broom Street.
I jogged through the next 2 yards, crossed the street, and saw Junior at the end of the block. He was eating his cookie with one hand and shaking his wanger at Mrs. Barbera with the other. He looked my way and shrieked and took off running. I chased Junior for half a block and lost him when he cut through Andy Kowalski's driveway. I stopped a moment to catch my breath and answer my phone.
Babe, Ranger said.
I lost him at the corner of Green and Broom. I think he's doubling back toward my parents' house. You can't miss him. He's eating a cookie and he's got his barn door open. I looked between houses and saw Ranger's black Porsche Turbo glide down the street.
I stood perfectly still and listened for footsteps. A dog barked on the next block, and I ran in that direction. I crossed the street, hopped a fence, bushwhacked through a jungle of out-of-control forsythia, and spotted Junior Turley displaying his wares to old Mrs. Gritch. I bolted out of the bushes and tackled Turley. We both went down to the ground where we rustled around, Turley trying to get away and me holding on.
"Stop that this instant," Mrs. Gritch said. "You're going to roll over my mums."
And she turned the hose on us. A black boot came into my line of vision, the water stopped, and Ranger lifted Turley off me and held him out at arm's length, Turley's feet not touching the ground, his pride and joy hanging limp against his drenched pants like a giant slug.
"I'm guessing this is the flasher," Ranger said.
I got to my feet and pushed my wet hair back from my face. "Yep, Junior Turley, and he owes me cuffs."
"I left him with your granny," Junior said.
I was soaked to the skin and getting cold. "I need to get out of these wet clothes," I said to Ranger.
"Go home and change. I'll have one of my men drop Mr. Turley at the police station."
"Thanks. I'll start riding around checking things out for you as soon as I get dry clothes." I took a shower, put on clean jeans and my last clean sweater, and carted my overflowing laundry basket out to my car. The plan was to ride around and do a fast look at the rangeman accounts that were between my house and my parents' house. This included Hamilton Avenue. Then I would mooch dinner from my mom and do my laundry at her house. There were machines in the basement laundry room of my apartment building, but I was pretty sure the place was inhabited by trolls, and I'd eat dirt before I'd go down there. I drove by two houses and three businesses. The third business was the insurance company that was already robbed. I didn't see anything suspicious at any of the locations. No one skulking in the shadows, casing the joint. No one throwing Snickers wrappers on the ground. The two houses were large, set in the middle of large landscaped lots. Easy to burgle if you didn't have to worry about the alarm system. The two remaining businesses were on Hamilton and would be more difficult to break into. They were both in high visibility areas with poor back access. In both cases, the rear entrance opened to a chain-link fenced lot that was gated at night. I motored over to my parents' house and was surprised not to find Lula's car parked at the curb. I thought for sure this would be another barbecue night. My mom and dad and Grandma Mazur were already seated when I walked in. I told them not to get up, but my mother and grandmother jumped to their feet and set a place for me. My father kept eating. "Leave the laundry," my mother said. "I'll do the laundry later." I sat at the table and filled my plate with pot roast, potatoes, gravy, and green beans. "Where's Lula?" I asked Grandma Mazur. "I'm surprised you aren't barbecuing again tonight."
"She had a date with some hot fireman," Grandma said. "She said she was going to give him brown sugar, and I said that was okay so long as she had some left for the barbecue sauce."
The phone rang, and my mother and grandmother looked at each other and sat firm. "Aren't you going to answer the phone?" I asked.
"It's been ringing off the hook," Grandma said. "I don't want to talk to any more grumpy women. Who'd think this would make such a stink? I help my granddaughter do her job, and next thing, we're all in the doghouse."
"It's about Junior Turley," my mother said to me. "Some of the women in the neighborhood are upset because you put him in jail." "He exposed himself," I said. "Men aren't supposed to go around exposing themselves at unsuspecting women."
"Well, technically, none of us was unsuspecting," Grandma said. "We wait for him to show up. I guess it's one of them generation things. You get to an age and you look forward to seeing a Winky at 4 in the afternoon when you're peeling potatoes for supper. The thing about Junior and his Winky is you don't have to do anything about it. You just take a look, and he moves on."
I poured more gravy over my potatoes. "Mrs. Ajak filed a complaint against him."
"She was in a snit because he skipped her that day," Grandma said. "It was starting to rain, and he cut his circuit short. Everybody's mad at her, too."
"He won't be in jail forever," I said. "I'm sure Vinny will bail him out again in the morning."
"Yeah, but I think his Winky wagon days are over," Grandma said.
It was dark when I left my parents' house. Clouds had rolled in, and a light drizzle was falling. I did a sweep past the accounts I checked out earlier, and I went onto Broad Street in the area around the arena. Traffic was relatively heavy, and I was only able to catch glimpses of Ranger's buildings. The drizzle turned to rain, and I decided to quit for the night and start over in the morning. An hour later, I was changed into my flannel pajamas watching television, and Lula showed up.
I swear, I don't know what things are coming to,
Lula said, bustling through my front door and heading straight for the refrigerator.
What have you got in here? Did you eat at your mama's house tonight? Do you got leftovers? I need something to calm my stomach. This keeps up and I'm gonna get an ulcer or diarrhea or something.
She bypassed the pot roast and mashed potatoes and went straight for the pineapple upside down cake.
You don't mind if I eat this, do you?
Knock yourself out. Lula found a fork and dug into the cake.
First off, I got myself a date with that hot-looking fireman. You remember the one? The big brute with muscles bulging out everywhere. So he came over, we did some talking, and then one thing led to another, and he said, would I mind if he go into my bedroom? And I told him he was sitting on my bedroom on account I had to turn the bedroom into a closet. I mean, where's a girl supposed to put her shoes and her dress-up clothes? Anyways, I supposed he had things to do with himself, so I pulled out my sleep sofa, and I wasn't paying much attention to him. And next thing, he's all dressed up in one of my cocktail dresses from the Dolly Parton collection.
Get out.
Swear to God. And he didn't look good in it either. It was all wrong for him. He sees me looking at him, and he says, I hope you don't mind I'm wearing your dress. And I say, hell yeah, I mind. You don't fit in that dress. You're busting out of it. You're gonna ruin it, and it's one of my favorites.
And then what?
Then he gets all huffy, saying he thought he looked pretty darn good in that dress, and I shouldn't be talking about busting out of stuff. So I ask him exactly what that's supposed to mean, and he says, figure it out, fatso.
I sucked in some air on that one. Calling Lula fatso was like asking to die.
It got ugly after that, Lula said. I don't want to go into the depressing details, but he got his ass out of my apartment, and he wasn't wearing my dress when he exited either.
She looked down at the empty cake plate.
What happened to the cake?
You ate it.
Huh, Lula said. I didn't notice.
Easy come, easy go, I said.
That's so true. It's true about cake and men.
Doesn't sound traumatic enough to give you an ulcer, I said.
That wasn't the traumatic part. The traumatic part came after I booted him out. I was putting my gown away, and I heard someone knocking at my door. I figured it was a moron fireman coming back to get his clothes.
He left without his clothes?
He was in a hurry after I got my gun. The thing is, I already threw his clothes out my window. You know I live on the second floor of the house, so the clothes kind of floated down and landed in some bushes, and maybe he didn't notice. So I'm thinking it's just this loser again. And I open the door, and it's the Chipotle killers, and the one's got the big-ass meat cleaver, and the other's got a gun.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, that's what I said. I jumped back real quick and slammed the door shut, and bang, 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 there was 3 bullets shot through my door. Can you imagine the nerve of them to face in my door? And it's not even like I own the door. This here's a rental property, and I don't see where I should be held responsible to pay for that door.
What happened next?
I got my gun, and I shot a whole bunch more holes in the door while they were trying to kick it in.
Did you hit anyone?
I don't know. I emptied about half a clip in the door, and when I stopped shooting, there weren't any sounds coming from the other side. So I waited a minute, and then I peeked out, and I didn't see no decapitators. And there wasn't any blood all splattered around either. Although hard to believe I missed some on account of they had their foot to the door when I started shooting.
It was easy for me to believe. Lula was the worst shot ever. Lula couldn't hit the side of a barn if she was 3 feet away from it.
So that's why I'm here,
Lula said, retrieving a big black garbage bag she'd left in the outside hall.
I brought some clothes and stuff with me because I figure I can stay with you while my door is getting fixed. It looks like Swiss cheese and the locks broke from those assholes kicking at it.
Lula closed my door behind her and took a look at it.
You got a real good door here. It's one of them metal fire doors. I only had a wimp-ass wood one.
I was speechless. Lula's a good friend, but having her as a roommate would be like getting locked in a closet with a rhinoceros in full attention deficit disorder mode.
You don't have Morelli coming over or nothing, do you?
She asked.
I don't want to interfere, and I'll be gone as soon as they get my new door put up. Don't seem to me there's much to it. You get a new door, and you put it up on those hinges, right?
I nodded.
Yeah, I said. Are you okay? Lula asked. You look all glassy-eyed. Good thing I'm here. You might be coming down with something.
She settled into my couch and focused on the TV screen.
This is one of my favorite shows. I watch this every Thursday.
I joined her on the couch and tried to relax. It'll be fine, I told myself. It's just for tonight. Tomorrow she'll get the door fixed and I'll have my apartment back. And Lula's a good person. This is the least I could do. 3 minutes after sitting down, Lula's head dropped forward and she was asleep, softly snoring. The snoring got louder and louder until finally it was drowning out the sound from the television and I was sitting on my hands to keep from choking her.
Hey!
I yelled in her ear.
What?
You're snoring.
No way. I was watching television. Look at me. Do I look like I'm asleep?
I'm going to bed, I said.
You sure you don't want to see the end of this? This is a real good show.
I'll catch it on reruns. I closed the door to my bedroom, crawled into bed, and shut my light off. I took a couple deep breaths and willed myself to go to sleep. Relax, I told myself. Calm down. Life is good. Think of a gentle breeze. Think of the moon in a dark sky. Hear the ocean. My eyes snapped open. I wasn't hearing the ocean. I was hearing Lula snoring. I put my pillow over my head and went back to talking myself into sleep. Hear the ocean. Hear the wind in the trees. Shit! It wasn't working. All I could hear was Lula. Okay, I had a choice. I could kick her out of my apartment. I could hit her in the head with a hammer until she was dead. Or I could leave. I parked in the rangeman garage and fobbed myself into the elevator and up to the 7th floor. I knew all eyes were on me in the control room. I waved at the minicam hidden in the far corner and tried to look nonchalant. I was wearing sneakers, flannel pajamas, and a sweatshirt. I'd called Ranger on the way across town and told him I needed a room. He said he was out on surveillance and the only room available was his bedroom, so that was where I was headed. I walked through his apartment in the dark and debated sleeping on the couch, but in the end, Ranger's bed was too alluring. He was working a double shift, doing drive-bys on accounts he felt were at highest risk for break-in. That meant he wouldn't be back until 6 a.m. All I had to do was set the alarm so I'd be out of his bed before he rolled in. The next morning, I was still in my pajamas, and I was standing in Ranger's kitchen when he got home. I wasn't entirely with the program, needing at least another 2 hours of sleep and a lot of hot coffee. Ranger had been up for more than 24 hours and looked annoyingly alert. He wrapped an arm around me and kissed me just above my ear.
"There's something wrong with this picture," Ranger said. "You're in my bed a lot, but never with me."
"It was nice of you to let me stay here. Lula has taken over my apartment."
"Nice has nothing to do with it," Ranger said.
"How was your night?"
"Long and uneventful. I need to get some sleep. Are you coming back to bed with me?"
"No, I'm up for the day. Gotta get to work and solve all your problems."
"If you call Ella, she'll bring breakfast, or you can get dressed and have breakfast on the 5th floor."
"I haven't got any clothes."
"Ella has clothes for you."
He took a bottle of water from the refrigerator, kissed me on the forehead, and left the kitchen. I called Ella, told her I was in Ranger's apartment, and 10 minutes later, Ella was at the door with a breakfast tray and a shopping bag filled with Rangeman gear. Ella wore Rangeman black, just like everyone else in the building. Today she was in a girl-style V-neck t-shirt and black jeans. I took the bag and tray from her at the door and thanked her.
"Let me know if the clothes don't fit," she said. "I saw you in the building yesterday and I took a guess at the size.
I didn't think you'd change from the last time you worked here."
"I didn't see you," I said. "I never see you. Food just mysteriously appears and disappears in the 5th floor kitchen." "I try to stay invisible and not disrupt the men's routine."
Ella left, and I ate a bagel with cream cheese, drank a couple cups of coffee, and picked at some fresh fruit. My eyes were pretty much open, but I wasn't sure my heart was beating fast enough to propel me through the day. I collapsed on Ranger's couch and woke up a little before 8 a.m. I picked some clothes out of the shopping bag, tiptoed past Ranger, and quietly closed the bathroom door. I took a shower, brushed my teeth, dressed in my new clothes, and emerged from the bathroom feeling like a functioning human being. I was awake. I was clean. The caffeine had kicked in and my heart was racing. Okay, maybe it wasn't the caffeine. Maybe it was the sight of Ranger with a day-old beard sleeping in the bed I'd recently vacated. I left the apartment and took the elevator to the 5th floor. Roger King was monitoring the station that included the code computer. I paused in front of him to watch him work. He was on the phone with an account that had accidentally tripped their alarm. He was polite and professional. The conversation was short. The account gave King their password, King verified the password, and ended the call. "That's the first time I've seen someone verify a password," I said to King. King was a nice-looking guy with a voice like velvet. I knew from his human resources file that he was 27 years old and had a degree in criminal justice from a community college. He'd worked as a cop in a small town in Pennsylvania but quit to take the job with Range Man.
If you work this shift, you get a lot of bogus alarms, King said. People get up in the morning and forget the alarm is on. By the time Chet takes over, this desk is like a graveyard.
When Chet showed up for his shift, I ventured out of my cubicle again and attempted small talk. Chet was polite but not stimulating, and I was feeling like I was contributing to the graveyard syndrome, so I moseyed on back to work, starting a computer search on a deadbeat client. Lewis had made good on the new chair, and my ass no longer cramped after a half hour. I was wearing black slacks that had some stretch, and a short-sleeve V-neck knit shirt with Range Man stitched on it, and my name stitched below the Range Man. Ella had also given me cargo pants and matching button-down collared shirts with roll-up sleeves, a couple stretchy little skirts, black running shoes, black socks, a black zippered sweatshirt, and a black windbreaker. I was on my own for underwear. A little before noon, I sensed a shift in the climate and looked up to find Ranger on deck. He spoke briefly to each of the men at the monitoring stations, grabbed a sandwich from the kitchen, and stopped at my cubicle on his way to his office. He was freshly showered and shaved and perfectly pressed in black dress slacks and shirt.
I have a client meeting in the boardroom in 15 minutes, he said. After that, I need to catch up on paperwork, and then I'll take another surveillance shift at 6. How far did you get on the accounts list yesterday?
Not that far. I was getting ready to pack up here and spend the afternoon riding around.
Do you need a company car?
No, I'm okay in the Escort. I stuffed myself into my new Range Man sweatshirt, hiked my purse onto my shoulder, and went to the kitchen to load up on free food. Ella had set out vegetable soup and crackers, assorted sandwiches, a salad bar, and a large display of fresh fruit. I looked it all over and blew out a sigh. Ramon was behind me, and he burst out laughing.
Let me guess what that sigh was about. You want a hot dog, fries, and a brownie with ice cream.
I'd kill for a meatball sub and a hunk of birthday cake, but this is better for me, I said, selecting a barbecue chicken sandwich.
Yeah, I keep telling myself that. If I get shot dead on the job, there won't be an ounce of fat on me.
Do you worry about that?
Getting shot dead?
Nah, I don't do a lot of worrying. But the reality is, most of this job is routine, with the occasional potential for really bad shit. I dropped the sandwich into my purse, along with an apple and an organic granola bar. Gotta go, I said. Things to do.
Knock yourself out.
I took the elevator to the garage, wrenched the rusted door open on my POS Escort, and motored out to the street. Probably it was stupid to refuse Ranger's offer of a company car, but it seemed like the right thing to do at the time. I had lousy car karma, and I always felt crappy when I used Ranger's Porsche and it got stolen or crushed by a garbage truck. I had my map on the seat beside me, and I drove from one account to the next according to neighborhood. By 4 o'clock, I'd gone through all the accounts and had checked off a handful that I thought had the potential for a future break-in. I'd gone full circle around the city and ended on Lower Hamilton, a half mile from the bonds office. Lula hadn't called about the door, but I felt confident the door was replaced and everything was cool. I drove up Hamilton to talk to Connie and Lula and found Connie was manning the office all by herself. Where is everyone? I asked Connie.
Vinny is writing bond for someone, and Lula is at your apartment. She said she lives there now.
I let her stay last night because her door was broken.
I guess her door is still broken, Connie said.
That's ridiculous. How long does it take to replace a door? You go to Home Depot, buy a door, and hang it on those doohickey hinge things.
Something about it being a crime scene. The door can't be replaced until the lab checks it out.
Who said that?
Morelli. He stopped by the office to talk to her after she reported the shooting.
Ugh, mental head slap. I dialed Morelli and did some anti-hyperventilation exercises while I waited for him to pick up.
What?
Morelli said. Did you tell Lula she couldn't replace her door?
Yeah.
That's stupid. She has to replace her door. How could she live in her apartment without a door?
It's a crime scene that's part of an ongoing murder investigation, and we couldn't schedule evidence collection today. I'll have a guy out there tomorrow, and then she can replace her door.
You don't understand. She's camped out in my apartment.
And?
I can't live with her. She rumbles around. She takes up space, lots of space, and she snores.
Listen, Morelli said, I have my own problems.
Such as?
You don't want to know.
A woman's voice called out in the background.
Get off the phone. I need help with my zipper.
My heart felt like it stopped dead in my chest.
Is that who I think it is? I asked Morelli.
Yeah, and I can't get rid of her. Thank God her zipper's stuck. I'm moving in with my brother.
For a moment, my entire field of vision went red. Undoubtedly due to a sudden violent rise in blood pressure once my heart started beating again. It was Joyce Barnhart. I hated Joyce Barnhart. She was a sneaky, mean little kid when we were in school together. She spread rumors, stole boyfriends, alienated girlfriends, cheated on tests, and looked under stall doors in the girls' bathroom. And now that she was all grown up, she wasn't much different. She stole husbands, boyfriends, and jobs, cheating in any way possible. Her very presence in Morelli's house sent me into the irrationally enraged nutso zone. I sucked in some air and pretended I was calm. You're a big, strong guy, I said, my voice mostly steady, well below the screaming level. You could get rid of her if you wanted.
It's not that easy. She walked right into my house. I'm gonna have to start locking my doors. And she came in with a tray of lasagna. I'm afraid to touch it. She's probably got it laced with roofies.
Okay, get a grip here. She walked into Morelli's house. She wasn't invited. It could be worse, right? Why is she suddenly bringing you food? I asked him.
She's been up my ass ever since you broke up with me.
Hey, stud, Joyce yelled to Morelli. Get over here.
Shit, Morelli said. Maybe I should just shoot her and get it done with.
I had a bunch of bitchy comments rolling through my head, but I clamped my mouth shut to keep the comments from spewing out into the phone. I mean, honestly, how hard is it to shove a woman out your back door? What am I supposed to be thinking here?
I have to go, Morelli said. I don't like the way she's looking at my olive oil.
I made a sticking my finger down my throat gagging motion and hung up.
What was that about? Connie wanted to know.
Barnhart is trying to feed her lasagna to Morelli.
She's fungus, Connie said.
I'm not too happy with Morelli either. He's a man, Connie said, as if that explained it all. I suppose I should go home and see what Lula is doing.
I know what she's doing, Connie said. She's brewing barbecue sauce with your grandmother.
In my apartment?
That was the plan.
Eek. Okay, so I know my apartment isn't going to get a full-page spread in Home Beautiful, but it's all I've got. Bad enough I have Lula in it. Lula and Grandma together are total fakaka. Gotta go, I said to Connie. See you tomorrow.
Vinny stuck his head out of his office.
Where are you going? Why are you dressed up in range man stuff? Christ, you're not moonlighting, are you? You aren't any good when you're working for me full time. Now I'm sharing you with Ranger?
I brought two skips in this week.
Big deal. What about all the others still in the wind? This isn't a goddamn charity. I'm not buying these idiots out of jail for my health. And it's not like you're the only bounty hunter out there, Vinny said. You could be replaced.
Lucille's been redecorating again, Connie said. Vinny needs money. Lucille was Vinny's wife. She tortured Vinny by constantly redecorating their house and by spending his money faster than he could make it. We figured this was retribution for Vinny boinking anything that moved. The good part of the deal was that all Vinny could do was pedal twice as fast, since Lucille's father, Harry the Hammer, financed the bonds office. If Vinny left Lucille, not only would he be unemployed, there was a good chance he'd be dining with Stanley Chipotle.
She's killing me, Vinny said. I haven't got money to buy a hot dog for lunch. My bookie took me off his iPhone.
Actually, it wasn't a good thing when Vinny got this broke, because instead of buying favors from professionals on Stark Street, we suspected Vinny was forced to chase down ducks at the park. Chapter 9. I left the bonds office, drove a couple blocks on Hamilton, and took a right into Morelli's neighborhood. Best not to examine my motives too closely. I was telling myself morbid curiosity was the driving force, but my heart was beating pretty hard for something that benign. I left-turned onto Morelli Street, cruised half a block, and stopped in front of his house. His SUV was gone, and there was no sign of Joyce's car. No lights on in the house. No sign of activity. I turned at the next corner and headed for the burg. I drove past Morelli's brother's house. No SUV there, either. Okay, get a grip, I told myself. No reason to get crazy. Morelli is a free man. He can do whatever the heck he wants. If he wants to act like a jerk and get friendly with Barnhart, it's his problem. Anyway, I have to expect that he'll be seeing other women. That's what happens when people break up. They spend time with other people, right? Just because I don't want to spend time with other people doesn't mean Morelli has to feel that way. I'm one of those people who need space between relationships. I don't just jump into stuff, and I don't do one-night stands, usually. There was that time with Ranger, but you couldn't really categorize it as a one-night stand. It was more like a one-time-only ticket to wow. I turned out of the Berg onto Hamilton, and 5 minutes later I pulled into my parking lot. I parked next to Lula's Firebird and looked up at my windows. No smoke, no sign of fire, no one running screaming out of the building. That was good. Maybe I wasn't too late. Maybe they hadn't started cooking yet. Maybe they discovered I only had one pot and decided to watch television. I jogged across the lot, up the stairs and down the hall to my apartment, reminding myself to stay calm. Lula and Grandma were in my kitchen, and my counters were filled with bottles of barbecue sauce, dry rub, vinegar, cooking sherry, a half-empty bottle of rum, lemons, onions, oranges, a keg of ketchup, and a 10-pound can of tomato sauce. Grandma and Lula were in their chef's clothes, except Lula was missing her hat. My sink was filled with dirty measuring cups, assorted utensils, bowls, and measuring spoons. There was a large pot hissing on the stove. "What the heck is that?" I asked Lula.
"I got my pressure cooker going here," Lula said. "I saw it advertised on QVC. It cuts cooking time in half, maybe more, and it preserves all the goodness of the food. It was real expensive on television, but I got this one off of Lenny Skolnick. It's good quality, too, because it was made in China."
Lenny Skolnick sold knockoff handbags and kitchen appliances out of the trunk of his car. I went to school with Lenny. He was totally without scruples and one of the more successful graduates. "Are you sure it's supposed to make those noises?" I asked Lula. "And what about all that steam?"
"It's supposed to steam," Lula said. "It's why you call it a pressure cooker. And if you look close, you could see the pressure indicator is all red. That's a sign of good pressure cooking. You wouldn't want no green shit on a pressure cooking indicator."
"Are you sure? Did you read the instructions?"
"This one didn't come with no instructions. This was an economy model."
I kept Rex's cage on the kitchen counter. It was lost behind the bottles and cans, but I could see Rex running on his wheel for all he was worth, every now and then sneaking a peek at the pot on the stove. The pot had gone beyond hissing and was now whistling a high, keening wail.
Whee!
Red sauce was sputtering out of the steam hole, and the pot was vibrating.
"Don't worry," Lula said. "It's just working itself up to maximum pressurizing." "It's a modern miracle," Grandma said.
I had a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. I always worried when the little bulb at the top of anything went red. And I recognized the sound the pot was making. I felt like that sometimes, and it never ended well. "Maybe you should turn the heat down a little," I said to Lula.
"I guess I could do that," Lula said. "It must be almost done. We've been cooking it for over an hour."
Lula reached for the knob on the stove, and at that exact moment there was a popping sound, and the two latches flew off the lid.
"Holy cats," Lula said. "She's gonna blow," Grandma yelled. "Run for your life!"
Rex darted into his soup can. Lula and Grandma and I turned tail and bolted, and the lid exploded off the pot. Bang! The lid hit the ceiling like it had been launched from a rocket, and barbecue sauce was thrown onto every exposed surface. There was a hole in the ceiling where the lid impacted, and sauce dripped from the ceiling and slimed down cabinets.
"Guess we aren't having barbecue for dinner tonight," Grandma said, creeping back to the stove to look in the pot.
Lula swiped at some of the sauce off the counter and tasted it.
"Not exactly right yet, anyways."
A splotch